Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk with a Doc, the show where we bring common questions to medical experts for insight and information. I'm Brendan Hooley, and joining me today are two Providence physicians that specialize in gastroenterology, Dr. Tony Lee of Little Company of Mary in Torrance, California, and Dr. Eugene Yoon, who practices at St. Jude Medical Center in Fullerton, California. They're here to talk about colorectal cancer screenings, what you need to know when it comes to when you should be screened, the different types of screenings, and who should be getting which, along with everything else you need to learn to make yourself comfortable when it comes to scheduling your screening. So let's get started. Hi, Dr. Lee and Dr. Yoon.
Hi, Brendan. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Dr. Lee, can you tell us a little about yourself and your work at Providence and what brought you to this field?
Sure, Brendan. And thank you again so much for having me and really feel privileged to be here. I grew up in Chicago, went to Northwestern for medical school, thought I would never leave, but then came out west and did my residency at University of Southern California, met my wife there and also fell in love with SoCal. So stayed in LA for my fellowship at UCLA and subsequently joined a large private group, private gastroenterology group in the South Bay. And over the years had become, you know, pretty heavily involved with physician leadership and hospital policies. You know, I was privileged to serve as chief of staff at Providence Little Company of Mary Hospital in Torrance and currently as a foundation board member. But regarding the digestive health, you know, I'm currently serving as the medical director for GI and endoscopy services at Little Company of Mary, and along with my good friend here, Dr. Yoon, as one of the physician advisors for the Providence South Division. Really love the field. Think gastroenterology is the best field in medicine. I think it's both cerebral and also procedural. So it offers the opportunity for us to care for our patients on a very intimate and individual level, but as well as the wonderful opportunity to really impact our diverse population from a public health standpoint, particularly in GI cancer prevention. And certainly from a very personal perspective, my uncle, who's a physician, ironically, ignored colon cancer screening and was diagnosed with colon cancer. Fortunately, he's okay and after surgery. So kind of brings it really close to home. So I'm happy to be here to talk about it. Thank you, Brendan.
Well, that's awesome. I know that we in California are very happy to have you here, although I'm sure you probably miss the pizza in Chicago. Dr. Yoon, you're up. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and sure. What brought you to this field as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Similar to Tony, I actually did not grow up in Southern California. I grew up in Virginia, actually. I did my undergrad at Johns Hopkins and then medical school at University of Virginia. But what led me out to California was actually my wife. I didn't meet my wife here, but she came out here for optometry school. So as a good husband, I came out and did my residency at UC Irvine and then did my fellowship there as well. So it's been good. And then we like Tony, kind of fell in love with this area and decided to stay. And I've been at St. Jude ever since I graduated from my fellowship. Currently, I also serve as the director for our Digestive Health Institute at St. Jude and our endoscopy. It's been good working with the surgeons and working with the whole department. It's been a pleasure kind of serving. A lot of times patients ask me as well, like, why did you go into this field? And I struggle with this because I usually give like a long, boring answer and I lose their attention. So usually I just say, well, somebody has to do it, right? Somebody has to do GI. So this is why I do it. And they kind of like that answer. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you do want somebody who's got good skills doing it if they're going to be working with you, right?
Right.
So let's talk about colorectal cancer. Just how common is this particular form of cancer?
It's very common. It's actually the third leading cause of cancer, the second leading cause of cancer death. They estimate, I believe, in American men, 1 out of 23 men in their lifetime will get colon cancer or will develop colon cancer. And I believe the number is 1 out of 26 American women will also develop colon cancer. So it's fairly common in this country.
Wow. So what are the risk factors for developing colorectal cancer as an adult?
Yeah, I think there are multiple risk factors, and the risk of colorectal cancer is of course influenced by both environmental and genetic factors. Age is a major factor. So it's relatively uncommon before age 40, and the incidence begins to increase significantly between 40 and 50. And so age-specific incidence rates increase with each succeeding decade thereafter. So that's why the age is a factor such that the screening recommendations are heavily impacted by that.
Wow.
Yeah, that's one major factor. And Gene, do you want to speak to the other factors as well?
They have done some research on certain risk factors. A lot of it is genetic. So if you do have a family history, there are a couple very well-known genetic conditions that can lead to early onset colon cancer. Other things though, I would say obesity has been associated with colon cancer risk, the sedentary lifestyle, even some observational studies showing that a lot of consuming a lot of red meat that can also be associated with increased risk of colon cancer. Smoking, alcohol, those are also risk factors for colon cancer.
Wow. I know you mentioned red meat. That makes me wonder if, like, does a high fiber diet have a sort of opposite effect, like reduce your risk of developing it as you get older?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Brendan. I think some of the protective factors, as you mentioned, high fiber diet, I think is protective. There's some other smaller studies suggesting maybe vitamin D, calcium supplements may be protective. And like Gene was saying, a lot of this is metabolic dysregulation. And as our population gets a little bit more heavy set and obesity becomes an issue, even at a younger age, I think it's something we want to be very mindful of as well.
Okay. So it sounds like taking care of ourselves plays a big role. That's good to know. So what are the signs and symptoms of colorectal cancer if you've started to develop it inside your own body? How do you know?
I think the scary thing is for most people, and Tony can attest to this, when we diagnose colon cancer, I would say the majority of times the patients have no symptoms at all.
Oh, wow.
So that's the scary thing. Yeah. So that's why it's important to actually get your screening done, whether you're having symptoms or not, on time.
Wow.
Gene, that's actually absolutely true. And sometimes they get surprised and we get surprised, right? When we do a colonoscopy and we find a mass in the colon. But I think, some of the other more obvious signs would be rectal bleeding, unexplained abdominal pain, unexplained weight loss, sort of persistent change in bowel habits. All those things should raise a red flag and hopefully promote awareness to at least seek advice and consultation from a physician.
So early detection, really, it sounds like it almost happens after the fact more than ahead of it, or are there things that can help you detect it early if you have colorectal cancer?
Yeah, I would say like probably just getting your screening done on time. That's probably the most important thing. Like Tony was describing those symptoms, mm-hmm. But a lot of times once you already have symptoms, it could be a later stage of colon cancer. So in order to detect it early, I do think I don't think symptoms actually matter. So I think just coming in on time, whether you have a family mm-hmm. history and getting your first screening colonoscopy earlier, or just coming at that age of 45, I think it's very important.
Ah, well, that takes me right to the question I was about to ask, which is who should be screened for this cancer and how often and when do you start doing it? Because I know I just recently had my first colonoscopy because I turned 40 about a year and a half ago.
So I think just the one point to clarify, when we talk about screening really means no symptoms. So whenever you already have symptoms, it's really no longer a screening exam. You're trying to do a diagnostic study to
That's
figure
true.
Out what the symptoms are from. So I think as Gene was alluding to, just staying with the age criteria, staying with the guidelines, start at 45 and continue to follow the guidelines.
Okay, so how often after you start getting screened for colon cancer, do you go back for another one?
So for colonoscopy, usually it's every 10 years. And the reason that we can kind of stretch it out like that, the intervals being so long over 10 years, is because colonoscopy not only detects early colon cancer, but it also detects the precursor lesions, which are polyps. So if you do a colonoscopy and a patient does not have any polyps, no precursor lesions, they should be good for 10 years before they have to get screened again. So that's one unique thing about colon cancer. I think most other cancers like lung cancer, breast cancer, and so forth, they usually don't have a precursor lesion. So that's what makes this disease preventable, that we're able to identify those precursors and take care of them during the colonoscopy.
It sounds like these precursors take a bit of time to develop then, yes?
Yeah, it usually takes several years for a precancerous polyp to fully develop into colon cancer. So there is time. So I think you're right, Gene and Brendan. You know, it's a unique situation where we can actually affect patients and kind of be a true preventative measure. Because we're really not looking for cancer on a screening colonoscopy. We're looking for the precancerous polyps so we can remove them and therefore prevent colon cancer.
Wow. So this has me curious. Are there any other ways that you can check for colon cancer besides a colonoscopy?
So yeah, I think the next, or what we actually recommend if you're not going to get a colonoscopy, what we call a FIT test, the fecal immunochemistry test, looking for microscopic blood in the stool. So that test is actually a very non-invasive way to screen for colon cancer.
But I imagine it has some limitations as a result of that, yes?
Yeah, it's I would say it kind of ranges between 70 to 90% accuracy for detecting colon cancer. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, it's really detecting colon cancer. It's not really that great for detecting the precursor lesions or the polyps. So that's why it has to be done fairly frequently, and we're talking at least once a year to do the FIT testing.
Oh, wow. So that's a much higher frequency.
Yeah, mainly because once again, we're detecting early colon cancer more so than the polyps. Yeah.
Okay, well, it sounds like the colonoscopy is the preferred method if you don't want to keep testing so frequently. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that procedure. What does the prep for a colonoscopy look like these days?
So the prep fortunately has evolved over time. It used to be sort of a gallon of seawater, if you will, and it's not fun to drink. It's the volume itself is relatively, it's tough to bear. So I salute everyone for going through it. But the bowel prep generally involves some form of liquid or some sort of capsule, but also sometimes it's combined with other laxatives as well in pill forms. Patients will usually keep on a clear liquid diet the day prior to the procedure, and they go through the bowel cleansing and then just stay nothing by mouth overnight prior to the procedure, and then just come in the morning and be taken care of.
Taken care of is a good way to describe it. I have vague memories of my colonoscopy. I remember waking up from the procedure. I don't really remember getting dressed, but I do remember then being in the post-op area where I was waiting to be picked up by someone who came to take me home, because obviously I couldn't drive home myself. So my memory is a little foggy of what happens afterwards. How long do you usually keep patients after a colonoscopy before they can go home?
I think usually about on average 15 to 30 minutes for most patients. Yeah, you're right. The sedation actually works very well. Most patients don't remember the procedure at all. There are times, though, some patients are a little bit more tolerant to the sedation and they may remember bits and pieces. But with moderate sedation, the goal is just for comfort. And yeah, once again, most patients, they do perfectly fine, and they don't have any discomfort during or after. So it's almost like that time period was erased from their life, and then they wake up, it's all over.
Yes, I called it milk of amnesia. So now that we've gotten through the whole process of a colonoscopy from the patient side, there's probably some stuff you're doing while I'm sedated. What is the process of going in and looking for polyps like?
Brendan, may I just ask add one additional thing to what Jean was saying about the sedation our previous questions? Because, you know, patients do have choices, and we try to honor those choices. And some people actually decide to not receive any sedation. Usually probably a couple times a year, you know, folks don't want to be sedated. And they're actually, you know, get a little crampy. But, you know, if the endoscopist takes the time and grants slowly, you know, just maneuver and navigate the scope, the colonoscope, they're actually relatively comfortable, I would say. It's not too bad. Interestingly, anecdotally, it seems to be our police officers who do not want to be sedated for one reason.
See, Tony, I was going to say that for me, they're usually engineers. Oh, they want to see everything. Yeah, oh, and have these control issues, right? Yeah, so my case has always been engineers that want to be awake for their colonoscopy. So.
Yeah, I don't think I need to see it. I remember watching an episode of the cartoon Futurama where Professor Farnsworth, one of the characters, actually performs a colonoscopy and they kind of show it. But that was enough for me. Yeah, a cartoon, that's all I need.
So the other thing was that now we're actually progressing into more deep level sedations, you know, with the Diprovan, otherwise known as propofol. But patients are actually out in about 10 seconds. And then the drug is actually very clean. So they're really awake within minutes after procedure. It's really akin to a power nap. And I think has really taken away a lot of the grogginess, you know, that one would get from moderate level sedation. So I think there are many options. And so it's actually much more comfortable now than years past. So I think that alleviates a lot of fear and concerns from our patients.
Yeah, I definitely feel like the prep work was more of a hassle than the actual procedure. So I've heard that lately there's been an uptick of colorectal cancer affecting younger people. And I'm wondering if you want to talk about this a little. Do you think there might be a reason for why this is happening?
Sure, yeah. This has been very interesting. And this is kind of why we decreased the screening age from age 50 down to age 45. I believe since 2011, I think they did a study from 2011 to 2019. It appeared that the colon cancer incidence was decreasing by 1% per year. But in patients younger than the age of 55, the colon cancer incidence was actually increasing by 1 to 2% per year. So for some reason, there was an uptick in the younger population. They have estimated, I believe, in the millennial generation, they have 2 times the risk of colon cancer and 4 times the risk of rectal cancer. Wow. So I think. Yeah, it was a bit scary, but I don't think we really have a good grasp on why that is. You know, we talked about those risk factors, and certainly that could be playing a part. Maybe those risk factors are more prominent in the younger generation. I did come across this interesting study. They actually found that in utero, there may have been some sort of exposure, let's say to a certain type of antibiotic, that affected their development, and later on, even in adulthood, that increased their risk of colon cancer. So to be honest, we really don't know. There's a lot of theories out there, but we're really not too sure why.
Wow.
I don't know, Tony, if you have any more research on that. Yeah.
You raise a lot of good points there, Gene. And I only have to look at my own kids. You know, they're much more sedentary. They play a lot of video games. You know, so I think that and childhood obesity, those kind of things come into play. And I think we're probably more cognizant of these of what's going on, and maybe we're doing more screening, discovering more people. People are more aware of symptoms, and also, you know, there's a lot of processed foods. You know, the red meats, the processed foods, all those things are sort of bad for you. But unfortunately, the younger folks are probably more prone to those entities.
I'm the child of hippies, so I wasn't allowed a breakfast cereal that had sugar within the first 4 ingredients on the box, and even that I think was probably a little generous. What are some common myths and misconceptions about colorectal cancer and the screening process that you've come up against or maybe heard from your patients as you're telling them about this procedure?
Like we were alluding to before, like I do encounter a lot of patients that say, I feel fine, I'm perfectly healthy, therefore I don't need to be screened for colon cancer. It's one of those things that colon cancer will sneak up on you. The whole goal of screening is to make sure that nothing does sneak up on you, because you won't have any symptoms until it could potentially be too late. So yeah, well, some people, oh, go ahead.
I was saying maybe that's a question worth segueing into then. You know, you talked about how these polyps grow slowly, how the screening process in a colonoscopy is really about finding those things before they become cancer. Once it becomes cancer, is colon cancer particularly lethal? Is it really hard to treat once it becomes a problem?
Yeah, I think as with any other medical condition in healthcare, I think early detection always bodes for a better outcome. Mm-hmm. And certainly developing colon cancer is not a death sentence. But I think early evaluation, if you're fortunate enough to find the cancer still in a very contained stage, which actually, if it's just some colon cancer cells inside of a polyp, that's an early transformation, and we can actually remove that endoscopically for cure. And then one would not have to go through all the more, really the morbidity of undergoing surgery, chemo, you know, radiation therapies, all those things certainly, not only from a financial perspective, but also just from it's really a torture, you know, to go through all those things for the patients. So I think early detection is good. And certainly even with later stage cancers, there are great therapies now to boost survival.
Yeah, that's good to know. I, of course, like anyone else, I think I would far prefer colonoscopy to chemotherapy. And it's good to know that it's a treatable cancer, but still, like, it's far more important to get it before it gets to that point, of course.
Yeah, I think if caught early, we're talking like greater than 90%, you know, 5-year survival. But even like Tony was alluding to, like even later stage diseases, there have been significant advancements with immunotherapy. They're very aggressive now, even with stage 4 disease. So these are patients with colon cancer that had already spread to the liver. But the oncologists are very aggressive now with chemotherapy, surgical resection, even resecting the colon cancer that has spread to the liver. And some of these patients with late stage colon cancer, they're still alive 10 years later. I've seen those patients as well. So definitely the treatment is advanced. But still, you know, of course, we want the best outcome for our patients. So that would be early stage, finding it in the early stages.
Yeah. Absolutely. Do you think there's a stigma or a fear associated with getting screened for colorectal cancer?
Yeah, I think definitely. You know, a lot of people find it kind of humorous to have a camera that goes into the rectum and goes into the body. They, you know, there's something that really intrinsically do not gravitate towards. But I think it's a very easy process. It's a minor detour. You know, you get the royal flush the day before, and it's really just you know, with the modern sedation now, you don't even lose a whole day. It's really I liken it to Gilligan's Island. It's a 3-hour tour. You know, you come in an hour prior to your procedure. The actual procedure is probably, you know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, you know, or so. And then you recover for another 45 minutes and you go home. And then with the cleaner type of sedation and a lot of advances, cleaner type of sedation, you know, the camera view is much better with really 4K imaging, so you see very clearly. We're using pediatric cameras, very thin, flexible. You kind of glide through the colon. The gas that we use to insufflate the colon, we've changed to carbon dioxide, so very quickly gets reabsorbed. You're not bloated afterwards. And then there's an irrigation system attached to the colon. You kind of run the colon through the car wash, if you will. You can kind of rinse. And so the failure rates from incomplete suboptimal prep is very low now. So I think, you know, there are a lot of advances. It's a very easy process. You're treated with a lot of respect and you know, privacy. And you know, I think it's a very I think we've evolved as a field. So hopefully that we can alleviate those concerns for our patients.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. Like I'm hearing a lot of innovations both in the diagnosis and the treatment of colon cancer these days. From what you're telling me, it sounds like this process is a lot smoother and a lot more comfortable than it used to be.
Yeah, I think the process has been fine-tuned. I think a lot of patients, they were very afraid of the embarrassment of the colonoscopy. But yeah, it's such a routine, common procedure now. Yeah, patients usually don't feel that whatsoever.
I think Jean, you're right. I think they're hesitant to come for their initial one. But after they've gone through it, they usually have no trouble coming back again because it's just not that bad. It's actually very easy, very easy.
So earlier we talked about how this isn't just a cancer for older folks, that younger people are getting it too. Do you happen to know about what the percentages of people under the age of 50 that are getting diagnosed with colorectal cancer these days?
I will defer to Dr. Lee on this one. I don't know the exact number.
I think it's been estimated about 10% of new cases diagnosed in people younger than 50. You know, so it again, it's a lot of genetic environmental factors, and then we pay a lot of attention to family history, diet, lifestyle, chronic conditions. Younger people, as you all know, may have inherited mutations or syndromes that increase their risk. So they may have other risk factors that are not related to age as well. So I think it behooves everyone to go through the screening.
Oh, that's great to hear. All right, so let's do a little bit of myth versus fact with you gentlemen. And here's my first one. Myth or fact, colorectal cancer only affects older people.
Oh, Brent, I think I read through that one already before, so my apologies.
So the answer is myth. Colorectal cancer can affect people of any age, although the risk increases with age. About 10% of the new cases are diagnosed in people under the age of 50 now. All right, let's do the next one. Colorectal cancer has no symptoms, myth or fact?
Actually, you know, that could be both. So yeah, colorectal cancer does have symptoms, but a lot of times they do not have any symptoms as well. So so that's both a myth and a fact.
Okay,
just to confuse things for you.
Another reason to get a colonoscopy, if you ask me. All right, so here's another one for you. Colorectal cancer screening is painful and invasive. Myth or fact?
So definitely a myth, yeah. I think vast majority of patients, after they get their colonoscopy, they usually say that was a whole lot easier than I thought. And there usually isn't any discomfort during or after, like we talked about.
And I can agree from my personal experience. Mm-hmm. All right. How about this one? Colorectal cancer is preventable. Myth or fact?
I think we'll go with fact, Brendan. Colorectal cancer can be prevented by removing polyps before they become cancerous or by detecting and treating cancer early. Screening tests certainly can help with both of these goals. And in addition, lifestyle changes such as eating a healthy diet, exercising regularly, maintaining a healthy weight, limiting alcohol use, and avoiding smoking can also lower the risk of colorectal cancer.
And I'm pretty sure those can lower the risk of a lot of other cancers at the same time. So it's good advice. All right. Last one. Myth or fact, colorectal cancer is fatal.
Myth. It is with advances in technology, with advances in screening, colon cancer is preventable and treatable.
And that is just about the greatest thing you can hear after being told that you might have cancer, which nobody wants to hear. Is there anything else that you two gentlemen want to make sure our audience knows that we haven't covered yet in our chat today?
I think it comes back for me. It's about education and awareness and sort of trying to raise that awareness for all our patients, you know, both in people who have great access to care as well as the population that's perhaps don't have as much of an access. But I think there are a lot of treatment modalities. Everything is getting better, just like everything in healthcare. New advances are coming. We're using technology much better. A lot of good treatment modalities. But at the heart of it still is that we need to look for it and detect it early. So I think it's really a call to action. I mean, I think as healthcare providers, our priority is to make sure that we invite our patients to come to the screening, to come to the testing, make sure we find if there's anything, then find something early. If not, then give them the peace of mind which I think is priceless as well. So I think screening remains at the heart of our care for our patients.
Yeah, sure sounds like it. And you've dispelled a lot of myths for me today. I'm hoping that you've dispelled a lot of myths for our listeners as well. Dr. Yoon, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Maybe just to add, like, you know, I know we've been like pushing colonoscopy, and that is by far the gold standard. But any type of colon cancer screening that is done, we're happy with. The best screening test is the one that gets done. So whether that's the stool test, whether that's the Cologuard test, we're happy when our patients are doing something to get screened for colon cancer.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to my next 3-hour tour in about 8 years. And I'd like to thank you both for joining us today on Talk with a Doc. We look forward to continuing the important conversation on health and wellness with more experts from Providence in future episodes. So make sure you listen to all our episodes on Lit Live Radio under Future of Health Radio or your favorite podcast platform. And follow us on social media. We can be found on X and Facebook and Providence and Instagram under Providence Health Systems. To learn about our mission, programs, and services, go to providence.org. And please remember, the information provided during the program is for educational purposes only. You should always consult your healthcare provider if you have any questions regarding a medical condition or treatment, because we're all a little different. Thanks for listening. And thank you, Dr. Yoon and Dr. Lee, for joining us today. And remember, at Providence, we see the life in you.